There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real, we're transparent, we're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Boys, put down your utensils. I want to talk to you about something real quick. If there's anything that you want to talk about, any kind of secrets, now's the time to put it on the table, okay? And if you tell me, we're not going to do that.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
I went to the petting zoo and I let the goat lick my
butt.
No, honey. Promise you wouldn't get mad, okay? They're being honest.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
One time I put a firefly in my butt.
Why?
To make my farts glow.
Oh, God.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
I touched myself to Drew Carey on the bus, right?
God. Okay, that's enough. Stop, please.
The Fan.
Let's do this final hour. Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Happy NBA season tip-off day to everybody out there. All my hoop heads out there. Fired up, watch hoops tonight.
I was a little disillusioned with my brother-in-law, who is a big Rip City fan, and says, I don't want to tank. Let the chips fall where they may.
Doesn't want to tank. Wants to win.
Wants to win.
Push for a playoff spot.
He basically likes every player on this team. Except Scoot.
Oh, God. What are we doing?
I don't know if I'm going to go tomorrow. I might be aiming more for the Friday night game.
Friday makes a little more sense.
I got Zion and the Pellies in town.
I hear Zion's skinny now.
He's more in shape.
Okay. Is he still diddling porn stars? Is that still his off-season routine?
I don't know.
Is that how he lost his weight? Still hawking loogies?
What?
Fuck two and spit on that thing.
I might be the guy who's, like, hiding because I'm booing the CJ return.
The most overrated era in Blazer history.
Yeah, be careful.
I mean, one player deserved it. The other one dragged us down.
Blazer maniacs might go crazy on you.
That sums up the entire problem with this city, but, you know, I digress. They're back tomorrow, and I can't wait to talk about them. The NBA is back tonight. I want to start the final hour. By the way, Millsack coming up. Keep your questions coming in. It's spicy today. Somebody just texted in about a three-paragraph one.
I don't know if I disagree with them either.
You know, we're going to go through it. Don't you worry. We'll go through it. And Andrew Nimick at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to give you a couple of college football notes quickly. Washington is on the road at Indiana this weekend. College Game Day is going to be there. The game is on the Big Ten Network, so it's kind of a weird, like, not on TV game.
We're here, but we can't show you this.
It's a big deal, yeah. But not a big deal kind of thing, because Indiana is having a great season, despite my anger towards them. Curtis Rourke, who is their starting quarterback, he officially had thumb surgery, and they're hoping that he's back for their game against Michigan State on November 2nd, but he is likely not going to play this weekend.
I would gamble he's not going to play.
Yeah, after thumb surgery, yeah. Probably not going to happen.
It's a big spot for the Huskies. They're capable of winning this game.
They're capable of winning any game, I would argue.
But
can they get out of their own way?
They've had road woes and traveling multiple time zones over. This is not going to be easy. Yes, it's not on the big nooner. It's not the game day, you know, featured game of the day. But the atmosphere is probably going to be electric and through the roof. Cignetti is a great story. I think maybe they're the story of college football so far. And although you hate them, I think it'd be kind of cool. I just, you know,
they got Ohio State looming the next week. So if they win this one, undefeated going into Ohio State, it's they win with their backup quarterback.
It's a little bit of a look ahead spot for sure with Ohio State looming. But Cignetti continues to do the whole Google me, I win, and his team responds. I thought they were on upset alert this weekend to win 56-7.
Bloodbath.
That's a pretty impressive response, I think, to that game. So, you know, Huskies can do it, but game day, the atmosphere, the energy of that building, He's really turned it around very quickly there.
Washington off of a bye, so they got that going for them, where they were sent home resting last week. So we'll see if they can win, but just wanted to update Husky fans on that. He's probably not going to play. I'd be shocked if he plays
today.
I think it's 5 last time I saw.
So sub-touchdown.
Sub-touchdown. Sub-touchdown. That tells you a lot. But we'll give our big pee-pee picks coming up in 2 days. We don't have call-in shows the way Paul Feinbaum does in the South. If we did, I imagine the sentiment from USC fan would be even more aggressive than what we're hearing from Alabama fan right now. There's a stat floating around this weekend. Lincoln Riley was the head coach at Oklahoma for 5 years. He is 2.5 years into his tenure at USC.
Mm-hmm.
He already has more losses at USC than he did his entire Oklahoma tenure. And mind you, 3 of his losses at Oklahoma were college football playoff games. In his career at Oklahoma in 5 years, he was 55-10.
Wow.
If you take out bowl games, he was 54-7 in his career. And he is 22-12 at USC in 2.5 years.
Yeah, he's also recruiting at a top 10 level for 2025.
He does have a good class coming.
They are financially, I don't think, in a spot to fire him, despite how bad this has gotten. And I'm out this year. You know, I cannot stress how pivotal next year is for them. And I am already kind of moving on because I just don't think they're legit.
They lose at home to Rutgers
on Friday
night. How are you
up 21-7 on Maryland and lose? Yeah.
USC to going all the way back to the Tulane game. Remember they had a 14-point lead in the Cotton Bowl in that game and they blew it with like 2 minutes to go.
Yeah, and then you hire Anton Lynn and, you know, maybe they still don't have the horses and that's where the recruiting part of this is coming. But then the report comes out he's not recruiting locally at like modern day in St. John Bosco. So they're just right behind Oregon for next year. I'm just fascinated to see what he does to get out of this because I don't think he's lost anything offensively, but his quarterback is not elite the way others have been.
They want Miller Moss benched down in L.A. I don't know if that's the right move, but that's getting called for on social media.
You know, some of those last couple weeks, the Minnesota game was pretty bad. The Penn State game, he cost them with some key throws. They should at the minimum had a game-winning field goal. They didn't. They went to overtime.
He was bad clock management, and they threw a pick.
And he wasn't. Obviously, they blew that game to Maryland, and you cannot be losing to Maryland in football. So
no.
That attendance is going to be very bad. They start trailing in that game. They are going to get... You were going to audibly hear that boo on television.
For the 400 people there.
But they're stuck with him. And this whole, like, we need to calm down with this Clay Helton comp.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Clay Helton was 4-8, and they recruited, like, outside of the top 30.
Yeah, he couldn't recruit.
Now, Lincoln needs to turn this around and do it quickly, but he's going to be there for maybe the next year or two. He's recruiting well right now. We'll see what those recruits end up being.
That's like the idiots who still argue for some reason. Like, I don't know why it would even be a thing anymore, but in the time at least, I remember getting into arguments with friends about Mark Helfrich at Oregon. Like, you can't fire him. A guy was in a title game 2 years ago. It's like, dude, he can't recruit.
With all of Chip's guys.
You realize, like, there's a sustainability needed to win year in and year out in this sport, and it usually depends on how you recruit and the level of talent you bring into the program. And if you're outside the top 30, you're not going to compete at the highest level. Like, that was the Helfrich problem. That was unquestionably the Clay Helton problem. I'm with you on that. The record comps are funny because they turfed him.
Yeah.
And he had a better winning, you know, percentage, whatever, through 23 games. He also had Sam Darnold to begin with. And then once Sam Darnold was gone, things kind of hit the skids there. And he also couldn't recruit. Like, Clay Helton was a disaster in Los Angeles. And it's not to defend what Lincoln Riley has done.
No.
But that's just that. I mean, 2.5 years in, you already have more losses than you did your entire tenure at Oklahoma. It's just funny that, like, I always love going back to the way we talked about that hire when it was made, and I remember my reaction of like, oh God, USC got Lincoln Riley?
But I kind of felt
holy
like,
crap. Like,
I might be misremembering this, but I remember thinking like, holy crap, what a grand slam of a hire. And I think you had the same feeling, but you immediately went, yeah. Win a playoff game.
Yeah, Dan Lanning will do it, bitch. But there is, like, it's just funny, like, now we're in year 3 and we're looking to, well, it's 2026, recruiting class is strong. So maybe he'll win by 2027 when a lot of these other coaches have been able to do it early on. Like, hell, look at Mario this year. They got their flaws at Miami. He's in year 3, but they're ranked in the top 10. He's hit the portal. He's recruited at a high level. Like, he's at least showing you, like, we've taken steps. Year 1, we sucked. Year 2, we're a little bit better. Now year 3, we're relevant, but our defense is terrible. They're at least in the mix this
year. People worried, Dirt, about the barometer of the playoff being the measuring stick for a lot of programs. Like, Penn State might have this. Make the playoff, and Franklin shows that he's the guy. Well, it's like 12-team playoff.
Yeah.
Your schedule's a joke 90% of the season.
Yeah.
So, that may not be the right way to do it, but to your point, like, Mario's team, they look like they're bound to lose a game. That defense is bad. But they might not till the ACC title game.
Because they play nobody.
They will be in the playoff. Yeah. That's what will happen. Even if they get embarrassed in the first round, that will be a playoff season. All right, Mario took the step. It's a 12-teamer.
Yeah.
Lincoln Riley doesn't need to win a national championship per se, but come on, 12 teams?
You got to be relevant, man. You're can't USC. Be sub 500.
You can't be losing to Maryland and Minnesota.
That's like, inexcusable.
Come on. You blew a big lead to Penn State at home. You had, there's three or four wins on their schedule that you're like, how did you lose? How did you lose? How did you lose? The Michigan game, for God's sakes. Like, you knew all they were going to do was run, and you stopped it, and then you still allowed a 60-yard sprint for them to get the go-ahead score. So, he's got to fix this. This isn't pointing to the recruiting and saying, well, in 2 years, we'll see it. No, they're recruiting well, but he needs to start caring about the front. Yeah. Those defense and offensive fronts need to matter. And I don't know who in L.A. needs to get it through his thick skull. Dude, you get offense. You know how to scheme. Why don't you go get big uglies on the defensive line? You cannot be losing in the Derek Harmon battles.
No.
Those are the ones you need to be winning in L.A.
No doubt about it. One last note on the college football world. Those worried about more and more power going to the Big Ten and the SEC, who clearly dominate and control the sport right now. There are six games this year in the regular season that have averaged north of 9 million viewers through their entirety. Do you know what they have in common?
They're from those conferences?
It's the only teams that are included. Those six most watched games this year, Georgia-Texas numbers came in, nearly 13 million viewers average for that game.
Yeah.
Georgia-Bama, the game a couple of weeks ago, was just shy of 12 million. Alabama-Tennessee, which led into Georgia-Texas this weekend, averaged 10.7 million. Oregon-Ohio State a week and a half ago, 10.4 million. LSU-USC, first week of the season, 9.2 million. And Texas-Michigan, second week of the year, 9.1 million. So you have SEC versus SEC for the first three, Big Ten versus Big Ten, and then Big Ten versus SEC.
Look, I'm not saying those games are always going to rate the highest, especially in the South. Those people, it's their religion.
It's all they got, man.
But also, like, what are the other games that have been featured on NBC, Fox, or ABC for the prime times?
Well,
it's only those two conferences because those two conferences are the ones the networks care about.
And they have the most interesting teams, which is tough.
Well, but, like, you're not going to get a lot of Big 12 teams featured in those games.
Yeah. It's just it's an uphill battle to try and cut into those numbers, and they're gonna lean on this stuff and say, hey, we need more power, give us more teams, give us more playoff spots. The numbers are in, and people are watching it, but to your point, they are in primetime spots on those channels. Let's get to the mail sack. Your questions welcome, Vancouver 4 text line 503-864-6326. We'll do it next on The Fan.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real, we're transparent, we're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Andrew Nimmick coming up bottom of the hour. He tagged me in a tweet yesterday, and now my mentions are a cesspool, so I got to thank him for that. It's coming up at 8:30.
He does like to tag people on Twitter.
He'll tag you, and then all of a sudden I'm getting people tweeting me things about Phil Knight buying, like, all right, what are we doing here? Millsack, in what way have you most yourself become your parents over the last year? Any obsessive Weather Channel watching or sweet Costco pants that you found? It's an easy one for me. The most exciting thing in my life for the last couple of weeks has been my pumpkins. I got two that are already ready to go. I got three more that are on the brink.
Who do you get that
Seven
from?
Pumpkins. My dad's always grown pumpkins.
Oh.
Big pumpkin guy. I've never grown pumpkins
Did
before.
Did you ever care to as a kid? Did you think
Not
I'm
really.
Do this?
Not really at all. This is more of I have a kid thing now that I actually want pumpkins. And if you grow your own pumpkins, the secret is you can get out of going to the pumpkin patch, which are one of the most overrated things on man on the entire planet Earth. And so I'm very excited about my pumpkins.
I probably got my mom's anxiety and short temper, and I didn't get raised by my dad, so I don't know.
That's all you got? Yeah. Anything, Swag?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I got my... I do have the teaching bug. That's the family thing, so I find myself trying to...
Who do you teach?
Teaching people?
Well, I taught all the interns here when we had an intern
you
program.
Did? That is
I
true.
I remember that.
That is true. That's where I started. What's the longest road trip you've taken? How long did you drive, and where did you go, and would you do it again?
Repeat that question. I'm sorry.
Longest road trip. Where'd you go, and how long did you drive?
Longest road trip I've ever done is probably L.A. I did it in one shot, left at 7 a.m., got to L.A. at, I want to say, 8:30. Fell asleep twice in between Sacramento and L.A.
It's
when
good feeling.
It's nowhere. It's just nothingness. Yeah. It's Fresno.
Darkness.
You know what woke me up twice?
Yeah.
Like, literally, like, oh, my God, I am still driving.
It was
terrifying.
Either that or some wildlife darting across.
I would have hit it. I was, like, dead asleep. I was, like, out. My friend was out. It was, like, planes, trains, and automobiles type situation.
This is a problem. Those little white lines, man, they make you fall asleep. You're just kind of humming along. The
there was
sound of the cars, nothing entertaining going on.
I just kept
on.
Thinking, like, who lives here? Yeah, why would you live here?
You got to roll your window down, put your head out like a dog. That's how you wake yourself up.
So mine, that's probably mine.
L.A.? Swag, longest road trip?
Was when I was a kid. My parents drove. My mom didn't get on an airplane until she was, like, in her 40s.
Just scared of flying? Didn't want to do it?
I don't know if it was her or her parents didn't want to fly, that I don't know. So we drove. My aunt had a cabin up in Aspen, Colorado, and I was little. My little brother was still in diapers. I remember driving from Portland to Aspen, Colorado over a couple of days in this old gold Dodge Duster. It seemed like it took forever to get there.
Did your mom see the Hindenburg by chance? Do you think maybe she grew up with that?
No.
That vision in your mind? This isn't good.
Anybody alive in there?
No. The answer's no.
No, she's good flying now. Once she had the opportunity to go to Hawaii, she's like, okay, I'm getting on
all right,
Earth.
Let's do that. Let's that sounds go. Good. How long does a boat take? That's too long. Let's
exactly.
take a flight. That sounds more ideal.
So once we got there, but it was like 2.5 days. I remember them pulling over in the middle of the night in like nowhere, Utah, to change my brother's diaper in the back of the car.
Yeah.
One of those things, but...
Good memories.
Yeah.
Good childhood memories. We did a drive when I was a kid to Omaha, Nebraska for one summer, and it was my appendix broke when we got there, and so that was a whole thing. I then had to fly back because I couldn't sit in a car for that long.
Did your appendix break or burst?
It burst. Yeah, okay. My appendix burst, and I didn't know what it was at first. So that was the fun end of that trip. I was probably in fifth grade-ish. I was very young. As an adult, the longest road trip I've done is to Phoenix to see my team lose in the Final Four.
I remember that trip.
It was a 24-hour drive, and then they couldn't get an offensive rebound, and then I had to drive 24 hours back. That was a lot of fun.
You saw a Final Four.
I did see
cool.
a Final Four.
That was cool.
It was pretty cool to see the floor and all that. That was badass.
I don't know if I got this from either parent. I know my answer wasn't great on that first question. It literally is my mom's anxiety. I have a thing right now where I don't want to watch my team play in pivotal spots because I don't want to see my team lose.
Hence leaving an Ohio State game early to not witness the final field goal.
But you're willing to do it. You're willing to drive to Phoenix in the chance that your team loses in a Final Four, and I don't think I
wouldn't
am.
Do that again. I would not. That was a one-time thing of like, I was a little bit younger, this is fun, and then that drive back was absolutely brutal. Somehow on the drive back through California, I also got us off of I-5. And to this day, none of us have been able to figure out how that happened.
How did you just stay on I-5?
I don't know.
Well, it must have been like a freeway.
It was a parallel
highway.
Yeah, so yeah, it was still going in the right direction, but we looked at the signs randomly and we're like, wait a minute. How? What?
Because like that drive sucks.
And it's never made any
Southern
sense.
California.
Yeah. No clue.
It's insane.
Almost got murdered at a gas station. Great times. Millsack, what is your guys' favorite place to get, get breakfast? Mine is Marco's Cafe at Multnomah Village. If you haven't been there, I highly recommend it.
Been to Marco's, Dean's off Highway 212.
Dean's your spot?
Yeah, Dean's is cash only. And it is old school style, home style breakfast that still thinks it's 1997 with the portions they give you.
I love that.
And the price they charge. It's delightful.
Love that. You got a go-to breakfast spot, Swag?
We're big La Provence fans. We have a La Provence.
Of course you are.
Over there. They're building a new one right there on Cedar Hills.
Put your pinky up when you say
you got to say La Provence. Yeah. Sounds good. So, I don't really ever go to breakfast. I should. I love breakfast food.
I don't do it enough.
We don't go out to breakfast very often.
I don't do it enough. I love to walk. I mean, this goes back to our Sherry's conversation. There is not a better smell in the world for me than walking into a breakfast restaurant.
Oh, God. The bacon, the sausage, amazing. The coffee,
just
the hash browns.
Makes you feel great.
Oh, feels good.
The best place, though, when I go visit PAX over in Bend, there's a place called the Victorian Cafe. And it's just stuff.
Perfect.
So good.
Spicy Millsack, bear with me. This is a long one. It's going to take me about 5 minutes to read through this. Oh. Spicy Millsack, keeping in terms of yesterday's spice... this is for Sprague and Swag. Can we start a policy of giving Dirt a smack every time he tries pulling the no one's giving us a chance card?
That's assault, brother.
I swear if we have to hear him bellyache about how tough he's had it as a Duck football fan with so much disappointment while they're winning how many conference titles and Rose Bowls and going to national title games while us Beavers are sitting here having no conference or Power 5 status, never having won an outright title or Rose Bowl trip in 50 years and the foundation we had laid was stolen from us, he really doesn't have any idea of what college football sports suffering is. Anybody who wasn't a Duck until 1994 or later does, because you have been hand-fed everything we ever wanted since then. Hashtag built, not bought.
Yeah.
Well said. Excellent. Well done.
Spoken like somebody who's never experienced losing a national championship game. It's incredibly painful.
It must be tough to be in a national championship game. I'd never know.
I was told, though, that Oregon's never won anything. That's what people always say. Oregon's never won.
They haven't won a national championship
yet. Cross-country titles, maybe.
Track and field.
Never won anything that mattered. So why
tall furs, baby.
So why does this count?
The first NCAA men's basketball.
It's told we don't win anything.
I was thinking yesterday, I can understand how that Beaver fan feels.
Dirt moratorium, basically.
Well, he does have from time to time. I don't think he means it. I would actually say this, despite what the Tex police may say.
I have been incredibly supportive of the Oregon State suffrage movement over the last year.
I genuinely do believe that.
I do not punch
still
down.
Still a big brother pat us on the head tinge of conceitedness.
What do you
about
want?
It?
You want me to just make fun of you? Is that what you want?
No.
You can't beat Nevada? Welcome to your new reality? Is that what you want?
Well, I think most of the time you're pretty fair. What I would say, though, is, and I don't think you intend this, it's much like my tone with my wife sometimes. I say something and she hears it. I don't say it how I think I'm saying it.
Why
right?
are you upset right
yeah,
now?
Well,
why are
would
you giving
say
me
that?
Attitude?
Like, no, I didn't mean it like that.
Just matter of fact.
Sometimes it's tone. And sometimes your tone is like, they lost to UNLV and you went, that defense was actually more impressive. It's like they almost gave up 400 yards and lost to UNLV.
I thought the run defense was pretty good this weekend.
They lost.
They did lose.
To UNLV.
I'm not defending the loss.
In a two-team conference where they're a pseudo-Mountain West team and they're like the fourth.
See, this is what I'm saying. Like, what do you want me to say then? Your program sucks. There's no hope. All is done. Give up as a fan. Like, what do you want me to say?
There is no positive takeaway from getting destroyed by Nevada and then losing at home. Yeah. And basically, I know you didn't, but you were down double digits until the last 2 minutes of that game.
Yeah.
That's your back-to-back weeks. So, like, I didn't walk away going, I'm really happy with the rush defense.
Well, I also am not coming in saying I'm very happy about Oregon State's rush defense. I just said they played better than I thought they were going to.
I know, but your team beat Idaho and you were panicking.
Yeah.
You guys won.
We did. You asked me after the Boise State game how I feel about Dan Lanning. Has my opinion changed at all?
I did.
That was 5 weeks ago.
I did, yeah.
Look, I feel like I am incredibly supportive of Oregon State and what they've been through. There's a lot of Duck fans who take shots at everything that they've gone through. I have never done that. So, sure, maybe I'm patronizing from time to time. I also wholeheartedly believe everything that's happened to that program is horse-ass, and they don't deserve any of it. And the fact that Cal and Stanford is in a Power 5 spot and you're not, is laughable because those programs are not Power 5 conference teams, and they shouldn't be Power 5 conference teams over Oregon State and Washington State. So, yes, I understand my pain and suffering is not to the level of what you have gone through. It's also incredibly painful to lose a national championship when a guy is down at the 50-yard line.
Twice.
One where you think you're going to blow the opponent
the
out.
The second one was...
Really painful to go through that. Really painful.
Cardale Jones. I thought you guys had it.
Mel Sack, if the Yankees win, does Swag become a Yankee fan next year?
No.
Okay, just checking. Mail sack question.
You've abandoned your hockey team, your NFL team. What do you mean, what the hell?
You have abandoned two of your fandoms.
In like the last 4 years.
That has happened.
What do you mean, what the hell?
We make fun of Patrick Harris on this show, and you have
done it twice.
You've done it twice.
You also said your team was going to lose to the Padres. And
you did. You said we're done.
Pitch gems.
I'm stunned.
Neither in the World Series.
I'm amazingly stunned.
You're amazing. Your billion-dollar roster.
How did Shohei Ohtani get him over the top? I can't believe it. I'm shocked. They have the best player in the sport. How did they do it? What? It's crazy.
$700 million deferred until the guy's dead. How did they do it?
Last one. Mail sack question to give you guys some time to think. What was your worst sports take you've ever had on the show? One that aged horrifically.
Too many to count.
Yeah, I can't. I don't even know where to begin with that. I would say my worst takes.
Squat 300 pounds.
I would say like non-sports takes are my worst. Saying I would never be a seltzer guy and then becoming a seltzer guy.
That was good.
And then being anti-cord cutting and now being all in on the cord cutting are easily my two worst takes I've ever had on the show.
The worst takes. God, I have so many. I'm trying to think.
It's too hard to. It's too hard to narrow them down.
Yeah. Maybe the Robert Covington trade. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, we liked that one.
Picks. Robert, I see it. I know it. I get it.
40% three-point shooter, man. 3-D.
I think I said John Ross was going to be a stud for
because he ran the 4-1.
Yeah, he was 40. Fast. That he was fast good. At the combine.
He was going to be the guy.
Oh, there you go.
I have a lot of the misses in that regard, too. The players.
Oh, that's the beauty of the draft. We all have no clue what we're talking about, but we give our takes anyways, man.
The best about football is that the football people don't either.
No. Not even the GMs do.
They spend all that time scouting. At least my excuse is I don't watch all the tape.
Spicy. It was a spicy mail sack today. Thanks for bringing it. Let's get to Andrew Nimick. That's next. All right, let's talk some recruiting. I'm sure that Beaver fan's going to be happy about this segment. Joining us now.
Hey, they got a commit yesterday.
They did. Andrew Nimick. He's not the commit. He's joining us now. They did get a commit yesterday.
Well, you know, Nimick is also going through it. I said on Monday, I went through a little bit of sports hell this weekend. Nimick is a passionately diehard Niner fan, so
yes,
he's kind of going through this a little bit, too.
It's been a rough couple of weeks for Niner fans. At Andrew Nimick on Twitter, director of recruiting high school on SI, and he's the host of Recruiting with Andrew Nimick every Thursday, right here on The Fan, 7 to 8 p.m., unless there's a Seahawks game. And Nimick joining us now. Good morning, Nimick. What has been the boost recruiting for Oregon since beating Ohio State? Because I feel like I've seen nothing but good news ever since then.
Now, first of all, what the hell kind of an introduction is that? Here's Nimick. We're making him get up. It's early. Hey, his Niners are all banged up and losing.
Hey, did you see that good news on Brandon Ayuk? Hey, things are going great.
Nothing on, like, what's your favorite breakfast spot? Or, Nimick, what's your best or worst call on the recruiting trail? No, his Niners are screwed. And with that, hey, Nimick. Cool, guys.
Well, frankly, Nimick, I'm a little upset with you because you tagged me in a tweet yesterday. Now my mentions are a cesspool of like random Miami fans telling me that Oregon won't win a national championship and Ohio State fans. I'm getting all these tweets now, man. You've jumbled up my mentions.
Oh, did you get a small taste of my entire life?
It seems like it's fun day in and day out.
Oh, kill me. Things are going swimmingly for the Ducks since their win over Ohio State. On the field, off the field, things are going very, very well. They are obviously number one in the polls. They also are number one early in 2026, in the 2026 recruiting cycle. And I don't think people realize how big a deal that is. I know it's very, very early, and that's important. Also, just generally speaking, the West Coast is almost always way behind the SEC, the ACC, and the Big Ten in terms of a look ahead to the year before. It's often the case that you will have 4, 5, 6 SEC programs with double-digit commitments before the first Pac-12, old-school Pac-12 program has even 5, any of them. So they often are close to done. You'll have Georgia with 15, 16 commitments the year before, and the top program in the entire old Pac-12 footprint still has 3 or 4. So for Oregon to be that far ahead of the curve is also that far ahead of where the West Coast traditionally is in recruiting. They have the number one class in 2026. They are the current leader for Jared Curtis, who just decommitted from Georgia. He's the number one quarterback in the class of 2026. Mm. And Steve Wiltfong of On3 just put in a prediction that they'll land Zion Ealy, the number one edge rusher in the nation and the number one overall prospect in the nation in 2026. So they're number one in 2026, and they're the leader for number one and number three overall, still to come potentially in just the next few weeks. So things are going very, very well in Eugene.
So to kind of play off of what we talked about earlier that you were referencing, what for Andrew Nemec is the number one go-to meal at a breakfast restaurant? And, like, who would Dan Lanning be if he was a breakfast meal?
Dan Lanning is kind of the bacon and the coffee right now, right? I mean, he's the thing that kickstarts you, and then he's the go-to treat for Oregon fan, I think, right now. That dude's doing a little of everything. Recruiting, that onside kick, I know, I'm sure on sports radio it was talked about a lot. That was gutty. You go back to last year, and he made some calls, some gutsy calls against Washington, and there are a lot of young coaches who would have said, okay, I can't do that anymore. I can't be the risk-taker guy in big games because it'll come back on me. That onside kick was a sign that he just is who he is. He believes in what he's doing. Again, he's the bacon. He's the stable force that everybody wants in their meal. I imagine Alabama fans really, really wish they got the coach that was 0-2 last year in the matchup between Oregon and Washington rather than the coach that was 2-0.
See, in my head, I think bacon and coffee is a good one. I'm going to pull a question up. Is Dan Lanning the bacon and coffee of college football? I kind of had him pegged more as like a chicken fried steak thing. Like, that's kind of how I view Dan Lanning in my head.
Man, that's an option that is good and savory. But you're going to get a whole lot of folks. I imagine, especially in the Portland area where we do a lot of like smoothies and stuff, there are folks who are just so out on a chicken fried steak.
Really?
I think you're either in or out on chicken fried steak.
That's another good poll question. I think Nemec's right on that.
Are you in or are you out on chicken fried steak as a breakfast option? I guess I'm surprised by that. I love some chicken fried steak.
It's like the presidential candidates. You know how you feel. It's one way or the other. There's no middle ground here. There are no undecided chicken fried steak voters. It's one way or the other.
I like chicken fried steak. Sure. Don't get me wrong. But I'll never get a chicken fried steak for breakfast, ever.
Really?
I'm 38 now, man. I feel like crap all day if I eat fried food to start my day. I'm lucky if I can have two pieces of bacon and not feel just awful for the whole day.
You're a granola guy.
I'm kind of granola-y. I am what you're accused of, Sprague. Let's just put it that way.
A soy boy.
He's a soy boy. Look at that. I mean, the hair kind of gives it away, but, you know, I'm with Nemec on the chicken fried steak. It's a good analogy and also a very filling breakfast at this point. Oregon State got a commit yesterday. Look, it's a lot of doom and gloom. They've lost back-to-back games. Nobody in the fan base is feeling good, accepting their new reality. How bad has the recruiting been, and what was the boost of getting a commit yesterday?
Man, you're setting the table for me to just make Oregon State fans so happy.
Yes.
How bad has it been? It's like, oh boy.
I'm trying to shift the blame to somebody else. They're mad at me right now. I'm trying to put them on somebody else.
I get it. They're 75th, 76th nationally in recruiting. That's a little down from where they've been. I like to see them kind of flirt with the top 50. That's kind of always been where I've put the marker. If they're like 53rd, 54, going into November, you go, okay, top 50 class, that's about where they should be. They have one, and this is where you're a little concerned. They have one commitment in the top 1,000 recruits in the country right now. That dog don't hunt. I mean, you can't recruit at that poor a level. They have slid in seamlessly into the Mountain West in terms of the way they recruit. They're behind UNLV and Boise State already in terms of recruiting. Boise State, you'd probably expect. Just because Boise State has been a national power, flirted with national relevancy pretty consistently, obviously, for the last 15, 20 years. The one that concerns me is UNLV. Not only is UNLV, and they're having a great year right now, but UNLV has flirted with just being competent in the last 10 years. You would think that Oregon State, with their tradition in the Pac-12, would have a traditional leg up over a lot of these Mountain West programs that they're recruiting against, and they're just not. They don't have a single player rated in the top 50 at their position nationally. That's concerning. Not a top 50, offensive guard, not a top 50 linebacker, not a top 50 safety, nothing. That's concerning. I love the quarterbacks they've got coming in. Deegan Rose is a year away. He's a 2026 recruit. I think he ends up being a top 200 kid. I think he's really, really good. I think they got ahead of that, kind of like Aiden Childs, and I know Aiden Childs is having his ups and downs right now, but he's also young and probably going to be quite good for Michigan State before it's all said and done. I think Deegan Rose is going to have a similar trajectory. He's got an aunt and uncle that live in or very near Corvallis, so I think he's pretty locked in. They kind of have to almost wait for him to get to campus because I do think he's very, very special. Tristan Tias, the quarterback they picked up yesterday, he is about as hot as any quarterback on the West Coast not named Jaren Sagapotule.
It's early.
I had it.
Can you pull that, please, Swag?
That needs to be a drop.
That was phenomenal.
Jaren Sagapotule. I got it.
There you go.
We're there.
Well done.
Yeah, thank you. Picked up an offer from Oregon and Georgia, but Tristan Tia, the quarterback that Oregon State just picked up, just got an offer from Utah, Appalachian State. He's pretty hot on the recruiting trail, and for them to bring him in is exciting. Of the free agents, I call him, of the quarterback class on the West Coast still, he was one of the better ones. So that was a really nice get. He immediately slides into the number three recruit in their class. I think he's actually number one by a good distance, by probably 200 spots. I think he's more of a top 500 kid, even though he comes in outside the top 1,000 right now.
Last one for you. We talked earlier. What are you most like your mom or dad? What's something as an adult that now you've realized, oh, my God, I've become my parent, the way that insurance commercial is? What is it that Andrew Nemec has become either his mom or his dad in?
Anxiety. My mom has anxiety, and I am an anxiety-driven human. I'm very type A about everything. Like I don't like having any credit card debt at all. Like if we pay for groceries with a credit card, it's like, let's go home and pay it immediately. Like I can't have any of that going on. If I've got a project that needs to get done, it has to get done as soon as possible. Or else I can't sleep. My anxiety's bad, guys. Thanks for this interview, by the way.
Yes, I have you going home after using your credit card and putting these glasses that just sit at the edge of your nose, looking
tiny
at a
little half moon
screen,
glasses,
trying to figure out how to pay off your credit card
move the money from this account to this account. We're gonna pay this. We're gonna figure this thing out. Well, it
it's
is a therapy
weird
Tuesday.
That you've got the camera in my house. Yeah. I don't appreciate it at all. I mean,
Sprague's known as a creeper on this show, so it kind of fits. The stereotypes are coming full circle right now.
Give me your address. I'm gonna look up what your house looks like.
He's looking you up. He's seeing how much you paid, all that stuff. Andrew Nemec, you can hear him every Thursday right here on The Fan, 7 to 8 p.m., the host of Recruiting with Andrew Nemec. He's our recruiting insider. He's
SB
the director
Live,
of recruiting. He's everywhere, and we enjoy the time. Happy Therapy Tuesday to you, Nemec, and hopefully we can catch up again soon.
All right, thanks.
There you go. Andrew Nemec with his thoughts on Oregon recruiting. Number one class right now in 2026. The top two players in the country, Zion Ely, as he mentioned. There's been predictions that he will commit. And then Jared Curtis is the number one quarterback in 2026. Nemec was talking about there. He just decommitted from Georgia last week. He did an interview yesterday saying that Oregon is his favorite school right now.
Are they going to get a number one recruiting class?
I don't know about number one. Number one, that's a tough.
It's just a couple more five stars. Yeah, a couple more five stars and suddenly you're up there.
It's easy. Just go,
I know.
Just go pay them all. We're doing.
I think you guys have. I looked earlier on 24/7.
They're ninth right now.
They're ninth, but they have 3 5 stars.
They're ninth, but they're largely ninth.
Outstanding.
That was great. They're ninth, but a part of being ninth, too, is they have a smaller number of total commits than a lot of the schools ahead of them.
Sounds like me trying to say a name.
Sounds like Tim Brando on Friday night. Tatum, 2-2-2-2-2-2 with the tackle. What was that? Jesus. All right, let's
back up to late.
Sometimes you just give
he
up.
He said you know like I knew the kid's name.
I mean, I know the kid's name, but it's because I'm a sicko. Let's wrap it up. The NBA is back. Poll questions. What are we watching on a Tuesday next on The Fan? Well, if it makes you feel any better if you're a bad gambler, at least this headline's out there. Let's boost your spirits a little bit.
Bronny James is garnering betting action to be a Rookie of the Year this year in the NBA.
This I don't understand.
Real. Stop.
I mean, it is. People are actually betting.
Betonline.ag.
No, it's like it's an actual.
Yeah, okay.
People are actually
good
betting
luck
on
to
it.
Them.
It's the same thing people did with Colorado last year to win the national championship. People are stupid, and it makes me feel slightly better because I'm having a really rough gambling year.
If you want to throw away your money on a Phantom, just go get a bad hat, or at least you have something.
FanDuel reported that as of Tuesday, 20% of the money that had been bet on its odds to win Rookie of the Year was on Bronny James. He's getting 20% of the
action.
It's
a bad class in general for most people. I still think the Klinger's a good value bet here.
Zach Edey, I believe, is the consensus betting favorite right now to win Rookie of the Year.
Over Ricochet?
He is. That's what the article's saying, over Reed Shepard, I think, who was in second.
It's interesting. I'm not surprised to see a tweet from a no-photoed avatared person on Twitter saying nobody watches the NBA. I totally get it.
Nobody cares.
It's interesting because tonight I think people that hate LeBron are going to hate LeBron more, and it's going to be shoved down our throats, this Bronny-Bron stuff tonight. NBA is here, and I just don't know where people are at. Is it exciting for anybody? We talked earlier. I don't think they've done a good job building up the next wave of star. So it's so Steph, KD, LeBron-driven. New York is interesting. They made a big move. Boston's the defending champions.
I think both games are pretty interesting tonight. New York, what they could do with Kat taking on the Celtics, who I desperately don't want to see win another championship.
Me either.
And then Ant Edwards, you know how I feel about him. He's maybe my favorite player in the league. And I know people hate LeBron James. It's really cool.
I think it's going to
like
be
him
cool
playing with his kids now as a father, looking at, that's awesome that he gets to play. I don't care if it's nepotism. Jody Allen owns the damn Blazers because her brother was rich, and we're going to bitch about nepotism. This is inexcusable nepotism. Get the hell out of here. She's allowed to own a sports franchise that she has no business owning. I think it's awesome. So I'm excited for the NBA tonight. Will I watch the entirety of both games? No, but I'll have it on. Be watching, flipping back and forth. And
I'm
curious
fascinated
to see how it goes.
By the Knicks.
I am too, man.
Fascinated.
I am too. I might gamble on them tonight.
Really?
Why not?
Banner night.
I suck at gambling, so fade me, but, what the
hell? I didn't know chicken fried steak was so polarizing, by the way.
It's a very polarizing thing.
It's like a
killing meal.
Split down the middle poll question.
That will do it for us, folks. The NBA is back. I'm happy for all my NBA bros out there. Good little show. If you missed it, go check the podcast, 1080thefan.com, at Thurton Sprague and at 1080thefan. Thanks for watching on YouTube, everybody. Like the video. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so yet, because there's awesome content there day in and day out. Thanks for being a part of our Tuesday. We will talk to you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Colin is next for listening to 1080 The Fan.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.